Hello and welcome to Untangled Resolutions presentation of The Problem is the Answer. I'm your host, Batavi Libntombini, and I'm coming to you live from Harlem, USA. For at least two generations, conventional wisdom in the United States has been that economic success and stability require a college education. At the same time, the costs of a college education have increased astronomically, by many accounts outpacing the rate of inflation by more than 36%. Today, a college student can easily graduate with a debt in the range of $100,000 or more. A significant number of these students are finding that, in the current economy, their degree no longer guarantees them immediate entry into a career of their choosing that earns them the return on investment that would justify and pay off the debt. This has led many people to publicly wonder whether it is time for conventional wisdom on college to change. On the show with me today is Angela Conley, a higher education expert and the founder and principal of Venture Force Consulting, a company dedicated to guiding young people and their families through the process of choosing and successfully gaining entry into a college that is right for them. We will discuss whether college is still worth it and the strategies that families can use to guarantee the best results on their college investment. Music on the show today celebrates Somi, an astounding vocalist and composer who has just released her first live album. The album is called Somi, Live at Jazz Standard, and you are listening to a song called Changing Inspiration. Sit back, listen, and enjoy while everyone gathers. I'll be back with you in just a moment.
Welcome and thank you for joining the show. My name is Batavi Libntombini and you are listening to Untangled Resolutions broadcast of The Problem is the Answer, a show about the financial, social, and personal issues that concern you most. Untangled Resolutions is a private practice in couples and divorce mediation. If you have an issue that just won't go away, work it out in couples mediation. If ending a relationship is your healthiest choice, I can guide you through the process so that you don't lose your shirt or your mind. If you'd like to call into the show to ask a question, or to make a comment, dial 818-532-9789. That's 818-532-9789. You will be instructed as to what you should do in order to be heard on the air. You can also call that number just to listen to the show if you are having to leave the house for some reason or leave the place where you're able to listen via the internet. You can also listen on your cell phone. We do have a chat room this week, so scroll down your webpage to join in the chat room. There you can chat with other listeners and ask questions or make comments. I will stop by from time to time, and I can get your questions and comments on the air. And that's great for those of you who are a little on the shy side and are not so sure about being on the air yourself. So you can ask your questions and have conversations with folks about what is really a pretty controversial and really important topic when we consider our economy and the future of our nation. I do have a technical issue to address with you. Last week, we had an issue where our show was dropped from the air because of an issue with Skype. I've moved, and it turns out that the location that I'm in, there are some interesting differences in the way that the internet works here. I'm working to work those out, but in the interim, I am actually broadcasting from my cell phone. And that's the wonder of this technology here on Blog Talk Radio. You actually have, as a host, the option of hosting your show from your cell phone. Well, cell phones have been known to drop calls, too, and it really doesn't happen that often. But if it should happen on the show today, know that the show is not over. You will need to refresh your browser, and I will simply call back into the show, and we will start up and go on from there. So it's not over. Just continue to listen. Call back in, or if you called in to listen to the show, or refresh your browser, and you should be able to hear the show start up again. Whatever the case is, the show does continue to record. So those of you who are listening on demand shouldn't see any kind of a problem at all. It will all sound seamless to you. You have been listening to SOMI, that music that you heard in the introduction to the show. And today we are celebrating the release of her first live album. It's called SOMI, Live at Jazz Standard. The song you heard is called Changing Direction, and it is perfect for today's topic. We are talking about how the significant changes in the economy are inspiring many people to question whether our most cherished beliefs about the value of a college education should change. Here to shed some light on the issue is my guest, Angela Conley. Angela is the proprietor of Ventureforth Consulting, a firm dedicated to guiding its clients through the college application process. She comes to us with an impressive wealth of experience. Angela is a graduate of the University of Texas who completed a master's degree in higher education administration at Columbia University. She worked in university admissions, student activities, residence life, union education, and as a guidance counselor, most recently at Bank Street College. In total, she has served at 8 colleges: Cornell University, MIT, Sarah Lawrence, Mills College, Barnard College, Columbia University, Queens College of the City of New York, and New York University. A native of Texas, Angela lives right here in Harlem, where she mentors with Abyssinian's Blue Nile Rites of Passage program. She volunteers at Harlem Hospital and tutors private clients in College Admission 101, and that's why I've asked her to come today. Her first senior class, known as iLead Scholars, attended Harvard, Cornell, Columbia, University of Pennsylvania, Trinity, Dickinson, Colgate, Colby, and Mount Holyoke and Wellesley Colleges. Other clients currently attend Fordham, Wellesley, Smith, and Brooklyn Law School. Angela contends that with 4,000 colleges and universities in the United States, including public and private universities, there is somewhere for everyone. She currently serves at Sponsors for Educational Opportunity. Let me say that again. She currently serves at Sponsors for Educational Opportunity, and she passionately believes that college changes lives and families. Angela, welcome to the show.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm excited to be here.
Wonderful. And I know from your passion and enthusiasm when we first met that I knew that you would be perfect for the show. And this question that we're talking about is one that is also really timely. And you know, the question that I've asked in the title of the show is basically, is college worth it? But should we start by asking, why are we even asking this question?
Well, I think it's interesting that the question is being raised so much of late in light of the fact that everything you see within the economy, within class, within race, is all seemingly to run amok. And in the midst of that, what other venue would best serve the youth and the adults of the nation except to retool their skills? And where would you go, and actually the only place you can currently go and get federal funding is college. So the question is, I think, lacking in context about all the avenues that are provided, not just for college, but post-secondary education and training in general. And so I think college is getting a bad rap for lack of the context of the demographics and the competitiveness of the United States globally and otherwise.
Well, what about people like Peter Thiel, who is one of the co-founders of PayPal? So, you know, this is a guy who is known for being able to predict the markets, who is really savvy when it comes to business, who actually has a foundation that is basically paying students not to go to college but to become entrepreneurs instead. He seems to believe that we are in a new bubble, and that it's the education bubble, and that education is highly overvalued. What do you say to people who are espousing that viewpoint?
I would, again, speak to context. It's interesting that Mr. Thiel is paying, not a lot, 11 or 12 students to pursue entrepreneurial pursuits as opposed to college. But notice, he went to Stanford undergrad and grad and then was able to launch PayPal and achieve the accomplishments that he has. And if you look at the students that received his $100,000 investment in their entrepreneurial endeavors, they all derive to a large degree from private prep high schools and very well-heeled communities with very strong public schools. So in all honesty, probably those students would be well-fed with or without college. But I think you're comparing apples and oranges. If you look at not just Mr. Thiel, but let's think about Mr. Zuckerberg. Yes, he dropped out of Harvard and he's a billionaire. But where was he before Harvard? And where was Bill Gates before Harvard? They were both from upper middle class families who had income, who had assets, and were able as a result of that to imbue in their students, in their families, in their lifestyle, thinking outside the box, creativity, risk-taking. But if you look at the numbers of our society right now, that's atypical. We have the largest inequity in the history of this country in place right now. Well, we have a situation where 90% of the folks in this country earn $31,000 a year on the average, and 10% make more than $3 million. 1% of that 10% makes $27 million a year. And you ask, what is the use of college? What other way beyond college can you scale the differential between $31,000 and $27
million? Well, let's talk a bit about how that works, because we need to, I think, address very specifically arguments of people like Peter Thiel. You've mentioned that one thing that seems to argue against or mitigate his argument is that the kinds of people who would benefit from his point of view are specialized, that they are exceptions. They come from already affluent families. They already have a certain kind of mindset that is relatively rare. And so saying that this is something that would work for everyone or for most people, you know, skipping college and going straight into business, for example, that is something that would work for everyone, really doesn't hold water. So talk with me a bit about specifically how a person benefits from a college education.
Well, I would say that the three primary benefits that I instill with my clients is that first and foremost, you learn how to think critically. If you look at our nation and the leadership that we've chosen in various venues, time and again, it reflects a people who, to a large degree, are not well-versed in the issues and concerns of the nation. If you read the statistics as they were advertised in U.S. News, people voted for a former president because he seemed like someone you could sit and have a beer with. Now, if you're a critical thinker, you might take a step back from that and say, so what does this person who aspires to be president have in common with me? And the typical person looking at the profile of said person would say, wow, they went to private prep school, and then they went to Yale, and then they went to Harvard. I don't know how comfortable I might be having a beer with them because I'm not sure what we talk about. But if you compare apples and oranges, you look at access. This person had the creme de la creme of education, not just Yale, but Harvard too. And his access was a total determinant of the achievements he made, which had nothing to do with intellect. So I tell folks, first and foremost, let's consider the source. If you are thinking about the college enterprise, how well do you think? And the mantra that I teach my students is heart, smarts, and character. And college presents the opportunity to conjoin those three concepts. You learn how to think critically so that you can pursue passionately the desires of your heart to achieve the character that makes a difference when impacting the larger world. Heart, smarts, and character. But if you don't have a solid educational base, if you lack, as 85% of the students in New York City do, a quality education because they live below the poverty level, so they don't have consistent access to the internet. They don't have consistent access to the kinds of opportunities and internships that a Mark Zuckerberg or Peter Thiel might have, then that's going to definitively impact your ability to critically consider the concerns, not just of the nation, but your own situation if you're operating in survival mode. And how do you move from thinking in survival mode if that's all you know? So college is a rite of passage, but it should not be a rite of passage to only be accessible by the very few, the very elite.
It's interesting that you talk about critical thinking and about a move from survival mode into a mode that I would suspect you're saying would be more creative. And when I say creative, it means being able to create your destiny, being able to create your economic stability, being able to create wealth so that it isn't just about, you know, I'm going to have a job so I can eke out a living, but how being able to think on top of the game. Rather than own the game, rather than being part of the game. But you also talked about access, and you talked about access in different ways. I'm interested in probing a bit what you alluded to when you talked about access to things like internships, access to people and networks. I know for myself as a small business owner, my first organizational client, because I work with individuals, but I also work with organizations, and my first organizational client was a former classmate. And so I found these connections to be really important. Talk to me a bit about what you mean by access and how college helps to expand or, well, the impact that college has on access.
Well, I think I should definitely own the disclaimer that while I've worked with clients from every hue and stripe, the focus of my efforts in the last 8 years have been first-generation, low-income students. And when you think about that, these are students who went primarily to public high school, and had intended before their interaction with the agencies with which I was involved to attend a public college. But what we found, and this has been documented in a book called Rewarding the Strivers, that if you take a first-generation low-income student and put them in an environment with folks like Mr. Zuckerberg and like Mr. Thiel, then the potential to not just get a job, but to become an entrepreneur, to think, is multiplied exponentially. So the context I would say is this. I would think of my student whose father worked as, and continues to work, as a building superintendent. His son wanted to go to an Ivy League school, and he was really bright. And he was going to a decent Catholic school, but his hope was to just go to City College. I worked with him. A number of mentors worked with him. That young man graduated from Cornell last year with no debt, and he's in grad school this year, again accruing no debt. Now, the larger context for his scenario is he's a Gates Millennium Scholar, and if there were no inequity in the system, why would Bill Gates create a scholarship specifically to level the playing field so that students whose family incomes are $60,000 or less have the wherewithal to apply to one of the 1,000 scholarships offered each year to first-generation, low-income students who aspire not just to college, but with the Gates Scholarship, have the opportunity to get a bachelor's, a master's, and a PhD and graduate with no debt. And I think that's the concern I have when people say college is not a worthwhile investment. It's a planning process. But the vast majority, nothing unlike the numbers of the 90 versus the 10%, do not know that you plan for college as early as fourth grade. And if they did know that, they would understand that the Bureau of Labor Statistics determines how many prisons they should have based on the number of third graders' test scores in the country. And
Wait, hold on. Say that again.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that the number of prisons is determined by the scores of boys on their third grade test. So everyone is test frenzy, and if you look at all the states in the United States, you have to take a test elementary school between third and fifth grade, one again before eighth and ninth grade, and those third grade test scores determine how many prison cells that they need. So if you want to talk about access and equity, think about Faraya Tudeh's book that says Don't Believe the Hype, because it used to be a falsehood that there were more black men in the state pen than going to Penn State, but that's no longer the case. We have the largest prison population in the world. So if we don't educate people to think outside the box and to look beyond this situation to a bigger picture of a potential future reality, then what are we creating by taking college out of the concept? How do you expect people to see beyond their scenario and their present situation without exposure and, as you said, access to bigger thinking? So I'm thinking about my kid, Jimmy, who graduated from Cornell University, and nobody in his family had finished high school before him. And now he's at NYU in grad school, and he's debt-free.
Wow. Well, I do want to talk about the issue of debt because ultimately, you know, that kind of explains why we're having this conversation. But I don't want that point to be lost, that education has such a tremendous impact on various social issues, one being, as you brought up, you know, how prison cells, the number of prison cells are determined, you know, that there's a prediction that based on the scores of third graders, you can predict what's going to happen in the future. So in terms of our society, talk with me a bit about the impact of having a highly educated population.
Well, I would say let's look at the global context. Right now, according to the last issue in Times Magazine of how America compares to our neighbors, we were number 21 in the world in our science scores. So our students were scoring below Russia, below India, and below China on state and national science tests. But that's okay. Because that's one. That could totally be seen as a fluke. But then you look at the number 31, which is where we rank with regard to math. Or if you look at the differential between the income for engineers in our country, the average engineer graduating from a top-flight engineering school, a Carnegie Mellon or an MIT, has a starting salary of about $75,000 here, compared to other countries. Well, that's a six-figure income because there are so few people with that degree. Or let's even flip the script and talk about global parity. What percentage of international students come here to be educated and take that knowledge back to their countries, leaving us with a deficit, which again speaks to the issue of our larger society because the fastest-growing demographic in America are Hispanics, but they represent only 12% of the college population. So if you are the fastest-growing demographic with the least amount of education, you set up a scenario, not unlike the instability that they've had recently in London, because you have a people who are disaffected and disinvested because they see no hope beyond the scenario and circumstance in which they find themselves.
Mm-hmm. My goodness. Well, so we are behind. We've been behind for a while. And it is an important thing to notice that we are behind as far as that is concerned. And we're behind, and it makes an impact. It's important. It's important, as you pointed out at the beginning of the show, in how we elect our leaders who create our policies, and it is important in terms of our ability to compete with the rest of the world. And with the debt crisis that we just endured, which actually the impact of which goes on, we noticed, I think, more and more people became aware of the way that we are falling behind with other nations, that it isn't just about bragging rights, but it is about really material things in terms of being able to compete with the rest of the world. So I'm glad that you brought that up. We're actually at a point where we should take a break, Angela, if you can believe it or not. I'm going to turn you back over to listen to Somi's wonderful new album, Somi Live at Jazz Standard. The album is available for immediate purchase and download on iTunes, but I really encourage you to catch her live in person whenever you have the chance. And I'm singing the praises of this album mainly because I have had a chance to hear Somi present this music live just this past Tuesday night at Le Poisson Rouge here in the West Village, and I truly found myself transported. Nothing beats live music performance, and as I always encourage you to do, I encourage you to support this artist who makes our lives so beautiful. This is Somi, and the song is called Kuzunguka. We'll be back in just a moment. Thank you.
please bow the knee.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the show. You are listening to Untangled Resolutions' presentation of The Problem is the Answer, a show about the personal, social, and financial issues that concern you most. I'm your host, Batabi Livingtombini, relationship coach and divorce mediator, broadcasting live from Harlem, USA. Untangled Resolutions is a private practice in couples and divorce mediation. If you have an issue that just won't go away, work it out in couples mediation. If ending a relationship is your healthiest choice, I will guide the process so that you don't lose your shirt or your mind. Work out your child support and parenting issues without spending years in court. For more information, visit my website, www.123untangled.com. That's www.123untangled.com. If you'd like to reach me via email, my email address is info@123untangled.com. And I like to make the process just like that, 123untangled. I am here with my guest, Angela Conley, and we are talking about the value of a college education. But first, I need to give credit to a few people who have been so supportive of the show. Ian Lynn, of course, who has been a key supporter, always sharing the show with his networks and also helping me find guests at the last minute. He has come through in the clutch a couple of times now, two times in particular last week, and a couple of months ago when I had a guest unfortunately fall ill and have to cancel within 24 hours of the show. So, Ian, I want to say publicly thank you so much for all of your support. I also want to thank Alicia Miller and Dee Reed, who helped spread the word on Facebook about the show, and my family, who do far better PR than I could ever do myself. They have been marvelous, always listening to the show, being supportive, giving me suggestions, and so forth. So thank you to all of you who are my community of supporters. I recognize you, and I really appreciate you. Next week, I hope to have K.O. Charles on the show. He is a playwright and actor and the author of and performer of a one-man show called Growing Up Daddy. I heard of him through Keith Honeywell of the Real Dads Network. Keith was my guest on Father's Day, and he put me onto the show. So I saw the show, Growing Up Daddy, a few weeks ago here in Harlem, and let me tell you, it was a tremendous, thought-provoking piece, and I encourage you all to see it. And I invite you to tune in next week to hear more about the show from the playwright himself. All right, so let's get back to the show and my guest, Angela Conley. I'm going to turn on your mic here. I know which one you are. We have a caller. Angela, you're back on the show.
Okay.
There we go.
Hi.
And we actually have someone who it looks like is asking a question, so I'm going to bring them on the air. Are you prepared to answer a question?
Hit me with your best shot.
All right, awesome. All right, so this is a caller in the 240 area code, and my practice has been to honor a person's anonymity if they wish to be anonymous. So you can use your name if you'd like, or you can remain anonymous, and I will call you caller. But this is in the 240 area code. Caller, you are on the air.
My name is Andre, and I was actually in the chat room. There's Know Your Enemy. We're having a discussion.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And yourself? But I was
going to
ask Angela.
Well.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on the show. I was just wondering where with Angela Conley. I'm actually a student, and actually when I got out, I had incurred some debt. But you know, they say when you go back to school, you can like hold on to your debt. But my thing is like basically when you're in school, your job economy might be open to your field once you're in school, but once you get out, like how you see with the recession, a lot of people be losing jobs and a lot of things don't be in your field. So what do you do when you can't find something in your field or what you went to school for, or when people are losing jobs? It's like, how do you try to, like, make up with other skills even though you're not able to get paid what you would make in your field?
I
Angela, before you answer, I'm so sorry. I have to step in here for a second. I forgot to let you know, and to anybody who called in, it's really important if you are listening on your computer or by some other device that you get away from the device once you're on the phone and you call in. There's a delay, and it can cause feedback on the show when it is broadcasted, and then it can also make it difficult for you to hear and respond to the answers. So I want to make sure, caller, if you can get away from your computer or wherever it is that you're listening to the show on, that would be really helpful. Sorry about the interruption. Angela, please go ahead.
No, Andre, I appreciate your question, and your question is more pertinent than you know, as I have several friends, one who had a PhD and spent 3 years looking for a job. And I would say to you what she said to me and what my other friends have said, that they've done three things. One, they've retooled their skills. By virtue of online education and unpaid internships, they were able to score opportunities to learn new skills that expanded or more finely tuned their skills, so they were able to explore different other arenas than what they studied. I would say, secondly, entrepreneurship. Some of the best companies I know were born out of frustration without finding a niche that's specific to your particular skill and education. And then I would say the third thing is partnering with like individuals. I have a friend who hosts a space here in New York for folks who are job hunting. And for a very, very nominal fee, they get together and brainstorm and share with each other opportunities and access. As someone who was until recently full-time employed, it is scary. But I think one of the things that's exciting about having a college education is that the concept of hope. You believe because you've learned to think on your feet. You believe because you've been exposed to the ideas of history and others' experiences that you can take what you've got and do the best you can with what you have. So maybe that's entrepreneurship. Maybe that's partnering with someone else who is employed, who is willing to work with you to create another opportunity. Or maybe it's thinking outside the box and getting together with a group to create your own group that employs others because of the skills you can bring together.
That's wonderful, right? That's wonderful advice there, Angela. And it is something that I'm seeing a lot more of. In fact, it's one of the directions that I wish to take the show in, is to talk with folks about how they're doing that, give folks idea about how to do that. Because you're right, there are folks who have fantastic education who find themselves suddenly out of a job and not having prospects of getting back into a job because of the way the economy is structured. As a matter of fact, Andre was in the chat room, and I was chatting with him a bit during the break. And, Andre, you mentioned that when you finished your course, Angela, it's interesting that you mentioned online education. Andre mentioned that he finished with Kaplan University, which is an online university, that he was finding work, but it was commission-based work. And I mentioned to him that that seems to be a growing trend with companies, that they are not hiring anymore in the way that they used to, but that they're rather subcontracting or paying on commission. Andre, do you want to talk a little bit, very briefly, about what your experience has been of that, and Angela can respond?
Sure. Right after I had graduated, I had about 40 job offers, and, like, stuff that wasn't in my field, then it was like they wasn't really hiring me at the level that I thought. And then the things that were in my field, it was all commission-based. So I was actually trying to find just like data entry or doing something with business, but instead I just kept getting commission-based instead of finding something with like flat paying commission or something that was saying that, you know, you're making between $40,000-$60,000. So it was like still they wanted extra experience, or they just wasn't hiring due to the fact of my degree.
So, Angela, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, again, speaking to the issue of thinking outside the box, I'm familiar with a gentleman who shall be nameless who has an MBA and in the midst of all of the economic downturn on Wall Street lost his job. But he fought back to his college days, and he said, what were the two things that I learned how to do in college that I could fall back on? So he used the equipment in his lovely $3,000 home and all the things that he had acquired with his MBA and created a yard service. In addition, he became a certified financial planner, and so now he's not only replaced the income he lost from his Wall Street job, but he's making more by his yard service, which he started out with just himself, and now he's got his nephews and nieces working for him. But through his financial literacy program, it's helping people set themselves up fiscally so that they don't fall into the trap he did of living beyond his means and assuming that the bubble would last. And neither is directly related to his MBA, but both have been the fallback issues that have sustained him in a really hard-to-predict economy.
Right, right. Andre, I'm so sorry. Thank you so much for calling in and for asking your question. I'm going to move on into something else, but thanks so much for calling.
All right, y'all. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks. Angela, you know, Andre mentioned that while he has gone back to school, his loans are on hold. And I think one thing that's important to mention is that while it is true that your loan payments are deferred while you are in school, what happens with the interest payments or the interest charges?
Well, that depends on who your lender was. And the vast majority of folks seek a subsidized student loan. But if you have a loan that is not within the context of the federal government or a private lender that works with you for a subsidy, the numbers can grow astronomically. Right now, the interest rate, if you get a subsidized student loan, a Stanford loan, a Pell Grant, a Federal Perkins loan, it's between 4 and 5% up until 6 months after you graduate. Loan debt that is education-related does not go away, subsidized or unsubsidized. Specifically, if you had a cosigner, that debt lasts into perpetuity. So I read an article in preparation for this conversation about a young person who was accidentally killed. But because his parents had co-signed for the loan, his debt became their debt, even as post his demise. So the debt can grow exponentially. But I would say two things. One, you need to consider your lender. There are lenders, even in the midst of this economy, who will give you perks, such as if you pay on time for 6 months, they'll give you a month to 3 month break to catch up because they recognize the economic constraints. And there is another lender who has posted online that if you have a problem paying back your loan, they will work with you to give you time, not just once, but twice, to figure things out if you can document that you're doing everything within your capacity to meet the challenge of repaying that loan. So I would say loans are really, really a huge risk to take if they're unsubsidized, but I would say, again, that speaks to the larger issue of preparing ahead, and 90% of people in this country don't have a trust fund. And they don't prepare for college until spring of junior year. And if you plan ahead, much, even in a bad economy, could be offset.
Well, listen, we have about 10 minutes left, actually, for this segment of the show, and it's the last segment of the show, so we want to make it good. Let's talk then about strategy. What do people need to do, and when do they need to start?
Great question. Thank you so much for asking. So, much has been said of late about 529s and with the economies, especially the markets ups and downs, how dangerous they are. But I have to tell you the story this year of a young woman who only got admitted to the state and public institutions to which she applied, none of the private. And she was panicked that she'd not be able to pay the $20,000 a year that a state institution costs. She called her mother, who was out of the country, and mom said, oh, well, we have a 529. So we have the resources between her divorced parents to cover you if you're going to state university. But they put that 529 plan out when she was born 18 years ago. So while the 529 has its naysayers, I would say a 529 plan at your child's birth within states that offer such is a huge, huge, I guess, planning strategy to pay for college. But at the same time, I would say applying for scholarships. And this is the biggest falsehood in the nation. People believe that you cannot apply for scholarships until you're a senior in college. But I would say to that if you look at the four big scholarship websites, FinAid.org, scholarships.com, FastWeb.net, and Zinch.com, there are scholarships for students starting as young as seventh grade. There's a scholarship called the Davidson Fellows that can pay up to $30,000 a year. And why do so many people do the National Spelling Bee? Because there's a six-figure scholarship that comes with winning that contest. I would say the same for the Westinghouse Siemens Science Contest. And my godson has been winning the state history contest each year in the state since he was 13, and he's going to be a junior in high school this year, and he's already saved $5,000 of his own money working by winning state history contests. So between scholarships, contests, 529s, and thinking and planning ahead, there's a huge way to think outside the box about how you're going to pay for college. And then there's the other thing that many colleges are offering now, depending on your willingness to take a risk. Many, many colleges in the United States now have campuses abroad. And because so few American students are willing to study abroad for all 4 years, several colleges, which I can think of off the cuff, give you the opportunity to go almost scot-free if you're willing to go to Abu Dhabi or to Italy or to Australia or to Egypt, not necessarily Cairo, to study, because they're making an investment in global relations and you're an ambassador for your nation.
I had never heard of that. So you get to study abroad, you get to travel, get the benefit of an international experience for free, or close to free, perhaps.
Yeah, and it's not one institution, it's several. I have a friend, that's what he does. He matches students in America who want to study abroad, who are thinking about international relations or global business, and they're very much invested in it. And he identifies the location, they apply, and the story continues.
Wow. Talk to me a bit about the kind of...
I was just going to say, Malcolm X says education is a passport to the future because tomorrow belongs to the people who prepare for it today. And we're a nation that lives and thrives on instant gratification. Instant gratification subverts your opportunity to prepare for the future. And we have to. If our society is going to be predominantly minority by 2020, then we need to make sure we prepare the least of these to take care of the rest of us.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And preparing for the future is so key. In a sense, the future is now. We are experiencing the results of decisions that were made years ago, and so we need to understand that the decisions that we're making now could change the course of things. We actually can impact how things happen in the future by making smart decisions now. I wanted to have you actually repeat the names of those four scholarship websites.
Oh, happily. One is finaid.org. So it's fin as in financial, aid as in financial aid, .org. And then next one is scholarship.com. And then one that many people haven't heard of that gives something like $1.6 billion away each year, Zinch. Z as in zebra, INCH.com. Zinch has scholarships where people can vote for you to be the recipient of the scholarship. And then FastWeb.net. And FastWeb has the biggest search engine in the country. It's run by Mark Kentrosky and a group of folks who have set up a system where you input your profile and it sends to you the scholarships best suited to your intellectual or biographic profile, so that you can begin applying. And again, you do not have to wait until senior year.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And in fact, don't wait till senior year, right?
Please don't, because I have a student who is a rising senior. She's already won $24,000 in scholarships. She's not straight A's. She's not an athlete. She just is a student who did what I asked her to do. I said apply, starting your freshman year, to a scholarship every week. That's all I have, 52 weeks in a year, 52 scholarships. She's 24,000 before she's even begun her senior year in high school.
My goodness. Well, listen, you mentioned that she was doing what you told her to do, so obviously she's a client of yours. Tell me about how you work. What do you do to help your clients maximize their opportunities for going to college?
That's a very much appreciated question. But first and foremost, I need to say that, like you, I have two kinds of clients. I work with one-on-one clients, and that's in person or virtually. Currently have clients in Georgia, Mexico, a number of places, though I'm situated physically in New York. Skype is an incredible invention. And then I also work with community-based organizations and nonprofits, because my bottom line is people perish for lack of knowledge. So I want the information to get out. So I do workshops for free for churches and nonprofits to make sure the information gets out. But my focus is heart, smarts, and character. So heart is what are you doing to give back? Because people are far more likely to give you scholarship money if you can document what you've been doing to to give back. There's a scholarship called Do Something. So with Do Something, you create a plan to change or impact your neighborhood. So to be doing something means there's 168 hours a week. You're not sitting on your blessed assurance. You're out and about giving back, whether that's to your family, your community, or the larger global society. SMART. SMART are your grades, your test scores, and here in New York, at least, your region scores. And those scores have to be in line. So if you have great grades and poor regions, or you have amazing scores and poor grades, then those things aren't in concert. So I work with clients early on, preferably as early as seventh grade, before you're taking the test for specialized high schools, to understand that that has to be co-alignment between your grades and scores. And that's especially important because the biggest money scholarships, the biggest money, are for folks who have very good grades. Not to say that there aren't flukes like the left-handed scholarship or the duck tape scholarship where you make...
You bet I'd be going for that one, the left-handed scholarship.
And then character. And I think character is the biggest deficit in our nation. So I tell my students character is defined as what you do when no one's looking. So character is, are you on student government because you want to give back to your community? Are you on student government to stuff your resume? And the out is manifest when you have to interview for colleges. And characters also manifest by the way that you take care of business. Are you doing the best you can with what you have? In Spider-Man's nuance, to whom much is given, much is expected. In America, education for all intents and purposes is free unless you choose to pay for private education between elementary and college. That being said, take advantage of what you get for free and do the very best you can. Take the most challenging courses available. If they have honors or international baccalaureate, advanced placement, take advantage of it. Because if you take advantage of that, then colleges are going to be looking for you. But if those things were available and you chose not to take advantage, then colleges won't take advantage of you because they want to bring people to their campuses who are prepared to do well there and who will contribute to the community. And how will they know that without looking at your record of heart, smart, and character, which is manifest in what you do with your time in and outside the classroom? Within the context of those three arenas, students have the wherewithal to situate and position themselves for success. And I'm just thinking about the last group of students that I work with, 13 went to school for free. And I mean the gamut of students. I'll talk about my young man who is going to be starting school upstate at a SUNY. His mother died before the beginning of his senior year. He was diagnosed with cancer in the middle of his senior year. And on top of all that, he lost his housing. In the midst of all of those obstacles, he's starting school next fall for free because regardless of the circumstances he encountered, he kept calling me and saying, what do we do next? What do we do next? What can I do? And, yes, his is an extreme case. But for a young man with all those obstacles working against him to be in college in 2 weeks without having to pay anything, that's the America that I was raised to believe in.
Wow. And, Angela, that is so amazing to know that there are folks out there like you and that you're out there to help people to be able to take advantage of this plethora of opportunity that is still out there. So there's still lots of opportunity. We are out of time, but I want to make sure that folks have the information that they need to contact you. So how can people get in touch with you?
Thank you again for asking. There are two ways. You can go to my website, which is ventureforthconsulting.com, and that's ventureforth, F-O-R-T-H, not the number fourth, ventureforthconsulting.com. You can populate the applets there, and that will get you directly to my contact database. The other thing you can do is call my number, which goes to my Google phone, and that number is 917-257-5587, and the Google phone will posit you in the direct voicemail box applicable to the interest that you express. I am available pretty much 24/7. I talk to clients 7 days a week, 365 days a year. My heart is for those who want access to post-secondary education, be it community college, college, or a trade program, to do everything that I can to advantage them to be able to succeed in that venture, because I believe that education is the mainstay to translating America back to its position as a superpower and our nation as to one where you have the Horatio Alger story. You can pull yourself up by your bootstraps, even if you don't have boots or straps, because you have the ability, because of education, to think outside the box.
Oh, wonderful, Angela. Thank you so much. You said thank you for the opportunity, and you are welcome. And I thank you for coming on the show today, for presenting all of this wonderful information that I know will be very useful to my listeners. We are out of time. I want to thank you all for listening, my wonderful audience, and those of you who are listening on demand. I leave you with Somi live at the Jazz Standard. The song is called Prayer to the Saint of the Brokenhearted, and it looks like for those of us who are feeling brokenhearted over the economy, there is hope. You can purchase Somi's CD on iTunes or buy it from her in person at her next performance. You can keep up with her performance schedule at her website, www.somimusic.com. That's S-O-M-I, music.com. Be sure to tune in again next week at the same time. And remember, Untangled Resolutions, we help you resolve your relationships without losing your shirt or your mind. Have a wonderful, wonderful week.
Come down and sweep over my bed. Sweet saint of the broken hearted. Come down, down, down.
Thank you.